services. We're almost into July, everyone. It's June 24th, 2003. The first bill that we have up to hear is Senate Bill 500 relating to Women, Infants, and Children's Program. And we'll go get the sign-up list. But while we're waiting on the list, just a couple of housekeeping items. If there's anyone in the audience who has a cell phone, please turn it off so we don't disrupt the hearings. And also, we still have Rosie and Rosette that are here, whose appetite is vociferous, who would like to collect all the dollars that they can when you speak alphabet soup. So for those in the audience who do not know that we do this in this committee, and the dollars in Rosie and Rosette will go at the end of session to the Oregon Food Bank to assist in feeding citizens in our state who are hungry and don't have some of the assets and that we do. So with that, we've got a good list on 500. Is Rip? Representative Donald Nelson, Donna Nelson, is she here? Or is her staff, or Matt, you're going to represent her. Well, would you come up? And Patty, I know you're there in the audience, and if you will come up. Jack, Senator, Representative, Senator, Representative Jackie Dingfelder, would you come up? Well, I haven't, you know, you make the transition from the House to the Senate, and you still say Senate, House, Senate, House. Anyway, then, welcome.
Thank you.
You might.
Sure, I'll start off. Thank you. Chair Winters and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Representative Jackie Dingfelder. I represent House District 45, Northeast Portland and Maywood Park. And as a member of the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force, I would like to thank you for holding a hearing on these two bills. I'm actually going to be speaking, if I can, to Senate Bills 500 and 501. And I have submitted written testimony, which hopefully you have in front of you. These bills will help low-income Oregonians meet their nutritional needs by giving them access to fresh, locally grown fruits and vegetables. And additionally, these bills will help local farmers by increasing their direct sales. Senate Bill 500 will allocate an additional $49,000 in state funds over the next biennium to support and expand the Women, Infants, and Children's, I almost said WIC, Farmers Market Program. This investment will bring an additional $114,000 in federal funds that will be used to provide vouchers to low-income women and children. These vouchers will give recipients access to the fresh, nutritious, high-quality produce available at many of our farmers' markets. Initially, the Department of Human Services intended to use the $40,000 allocated in Senate Bill 501 to help cover administrative costs for the Senior Farmers Market Program. But because of the success and overwhelming interest in this program, the Department of Human Services has now decided to use some of the additional funds to increase the number of vouchers issued. This will mean more fresh produce for seniors and more sales for local farmers. Like the Women, Infants, and Children version, this program provides vouchers that can be used at farmers markets around the state. In the first 2 years of the program, Oregon has been able to provide close to $2 million worth of vouchers to low-income Oregon seniors. We believe that the funding for administration will help Oregon operate the program more effectively and further increasing program usage and voucher redemption rates. These programs support Oregon farmers as well, so it's a real win-win. The majority of participating vendors reported an increase in sales as a result of these two programs. Many even reported planning to adjust crop production and variety to meet the demands of the Women, Infant, Children's, and Seniors Farmers Market Program recipients, at the demands of those two groups. The Women, Infants, and Children and Farmers Market Programs are examples of good planning and good public policy, as the dollars spent on these programs directly benefits multiple constituencies. Please help Oregon's hungry citizens and our farmers by supporting both these bills. These are two small steps we can take to address Oregon's high hunger rate. Senate Bills 500 and 501 have bipartisan support, and I respectfully urge the committee to forward them to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Thank you again for your time and for your consideration of these bills.
Thank you, Representative Dean Felder, for coming and testifying on behalf of Senate Bill 500 and Senate Bill 501.
Thank you.
How is the good Representative Nelson?
Senator Winter, she is doing better. We almost have our old Donna back, so I'm proud to announce. At any rate, for the record, my name is Matt Metter. I work for Representative Donna Nelson. I find it ironic that I am here today sitting in front of a couple of ceramic pigs talking about hunger, I who have never experienced hunger in my life, as you can tell.
Well, in this committee, we believe in sharing. So,
I have prepared some remarks on behalf of Representative Nelson, which I will now present more or less verbatim. And I, too, have addressed Senate Bills 500 and 501 simultaneously, if that is all right.
Fine.
Chair Winters and members of the committee, I thank you today for the opportunity to testify to the necessity of Senate Bills 500 and 501. Simply put, Senate Bills 500 and 501 nourish low-income seniors and families and support Oregon farmers in two neat packages. The Women, Infants, and Children Farmers Market Nutritional Program, which is administered by the Oregon Department of Human Services, provides coupons to WIC participants to be used at local farmers markets. The intent of this remarkable program is to encourage participants to purchase fresh fruits and vegetables. Similar to the WIC program, the Senior Farmers Market program provides coupons to seniors with which they may purchase fresh produce. Both Farmers Market nutritional programs provide additional sources of nutritious food for seniors and families enrolled in the programs. The programs also emphasize nutrition education and provide participants with the knowledge to select and prepare fresh produce. In any given year, Oregon has over 60 farmers markets in operation from June through October. The WIC Farmers Market Nutritional Program has been running in conjunction with these markets for 7 years. In order to continue the successful program, we must match 30% state funds before federal funds can be dedicated to cover the remaining program costs. Oregon's current allocation of $100,000 leverages $233,000 in federal funds, increasing Oregon's share by $49,000, leverages an additional $114,000 in federal funds over the biennium. That's an increase of over 40%. For the seniors program, now in its third year, an investment of $40,000 from the general fund would cover administrative expenses necessary to the program's efficient operation that are not currently federally funded. As a result of the WIC program's success, 78% of participating farmers report increased sales as a result of their participation. Nearly half of participating farmers intend to increase production or selection over the next year to meet the demands of program customers. In addition, nearly 87% of participating farmers, report sales increases as a result of the senior program, and 79% plan to increase production and or selection of produce. Senate Bills 500 and 501 also have the potential to significantly increase revenue for participating vendors. In 2002, 4,265 low-income women, 13,299 children, and 13,644 low-income seniors reaped the benefits of these farmers' market nutritional programs. That's 31,208 reasons to vote for these bills. Chair Winters and members of the committee, I urge you to support Senate Bills 500 and 501. A minimum investment garners a maximum return for Oregon seniors, families, and farmers. Thank you for your support on behalf of Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Patty, welcome.
Yes, thank you. I'm Patty Whitney Wise, the Executive Director for the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force. We're very pleased, and we thank you for hearing these bills today. I think you've heard very eloquently from both of our speakers about the benefits of these two bills. For a very small investment, we reap big returns not only for our low-income families, but for small and medium-sized farmers. It helps them not only plant for specific audiences, but stay in business, and to me that is a very great win-win between these two bills. So we urge your support, and I will distribute some fact sheets for your use later on.
Thank you. Let's see, Philip, thank you very much for your testimony. Philip Kennedy Wong and Alan Lowe. And Marcia Kelly, why don't you come up as well? And can I make the assumption that you're also all speaking on both Senate Bill 500 as well as Senate Bill 501?
That's right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Philip Kennedy, along with Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. With your permission, I too would like to sort of combine our testimony for both Senate Bill 500 and 501. So let me begin. Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon supports both of these bills for two primary reasons. First, there is a need for healthy food for low-income seniors, parents, and children that farmers' markets provides, and that, for example, our Northeast Emergency Food Program that we run in Northeast Portland, we have once a month what we call Harvest Day, and that's a day when we get donated fresh produce from various organizations. And that is a day in which our food program is the most busy. In fact, I have personally volunteered and have seen just the numbers of people who have lined up looking for fresh produce, because that is something that is hard to find, especially in emergency food service programs. The second reason why we support it is that primarily from a faith-based perspective, we believe and encourage a strong connection that people have to the food that we grow and eat. Through farmers markets, people have the opportunity to purchase food that is not only is healthy and good for them, but also an opportunity to get to know the people who grow their food. And that, we believe, is a very invaluable way for people to understand and get a better connection to the earth that we all share. We have worked in the past to encourage people to connect strongly to their local farmers. In fact, we have worked with a church down in Eugene. It's a Disciples of Christ church called First Christian Church, and sponsored an event called That's My Farmer's Day, where we bring together people in that community to get to know their local farmer. So for that, we encourage you to support both Senate Bills 500 and 501, and thank you again for this opportunity to testify.
Ms. Lowe.
Chair Winters and members of the committee, I'm Ellen Lowe. I'm a legislative advocate for the Oregon Food Bank, so I sometimes feel as if I have a conflict of interest when I'm in this room, but oh, how we welcome the many contributions because of your really training many of us to quit using acronyms. The Oregon Food Bank, in previous testimony, we have said that July is our second greatest month for the demand of food. You heard that when we talked about summer food, the summer lunch programs. And so there is a great need by families in the summer. And so both of these programs serve not only the young families who are part of the Women, Infants, and Children's Program, but also the seniors. I'd like to, just a personal note, my husband and I are regulars at the farmers market in the park blocks in Portland, and we have noticed something. First, when it was expanded to serve women, infants, and children, the welcoming that the farmers have expressed by the signs they have put up, by noting the coupons, and their responses. So it has resulted in some real dialogue. And now we have seen the same things with seniors. So we see what you're doing for the young families is acquainting them with one of the best resources we have in Oregon for our nutrition, and that's our locally grown produce. And then also for many seniors who have perhaps left their homes and in the area where we go, maybe are part of those neighborhood high-rises, really reacquainting them with some of what was very much part of their lives earlier. And so we believe these programs have a nutritional benefit. There's also a human interaction which really adds to their benefit. And so we sincerely hope that you will move Senate Bills 500 and 501 to the full committee and then to the floor as quickly as possible so that we can have this added benefit for Oregonians. Thank you.
Marcia.
Chair Winters and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the lobbyist for the Women's Rights Coalition. Our members include the American Association of University Women of Oregon, the Salem Young Women's Christian Association, I usually say it by its acronym.
You know, I must be, you know, everyone must be getting the message, and poor Rosie and Rosette is starving.
Well, I'll probably forget later on and give her a dollar or so. Delta Kappa Gamma, Oregon Women's Political Caucus, the Oregon National Association for Women. We have members all over the state. American Association of University Women of Oregon has 3,000 women in our branches and members at large. We have nutritionists among our membership. All you require is a college degree. But we have members in Lakeview and Wallowa County and Albany and Corvallis, Pendleton. And we're very much interested in any program that is going to help financially limited women, children, and seniors. Many seniors are elderly women, and they've either not been in the workforce or been in the situation where they didn't make as much money as men in the workforce, and they therefore live in higher incidences of poverty. So anything that can get nutritious, fresh food to these women and children is something that we would always advocate for, and we know that you would look kindly upon this, as well as bringing new federal dollars. It brings that welcoming attitude that Ellen talked about, because my spouse and I are frequenters of the Salem Saturday Market and the Wednesday Market, and they very proudly display their signs that say they take the WIC or the senior coupons in their booths, and it's something that can be very beneficial to our children as they're growing and our seniors as they're aging. So please move these as quickly as possible and get those nice berries that are out there into people's stomachs.
Thank you. You know, I was reminded in hearing you talk about the seniors of when I was in the governor's office as a state ombudsman when we started Food Share, and it was started out of the federal government had made some changes in food stamps. And Ellen was here, so she knows. And what the changes that they made, they were making changes in order to eliminate, if you will, students from having access to food stamps. But the results were that the greatest impact of the changes that they made was on seniors, because they would not allow in the use of medicine. As we know, that's one of the greatest expenses for seniors, and that they disallowed it, that they could not calculate it in part of the income. And I was receiving just tons of mail from citizens across this state, and the plight that it was for some of our seniors. And if you could have been here in those days and read some of them, where seniors were going without food. It was a choice between food and medicine, and in some cases, you know, you had individuals who were living on onions, and you know, we were hearing stories of seniors with, you know, dog food and cat food is cheaper than some of the other stuff. And it was that prompted me to say to the governor, Governor Attia, that we cannot wait for the federal government to change their policies, that Oregon must become proactive and do something to make sure that our seniors are fed. And that's how we started Oregon Food Share. It was interesting because we got the Lions Club was across the state, came forward and said that they would help collect the foods. It was the National Guards, I can still remember, had a truck that some farmer had given of potatoes. and we trucked them in. All of the jurists here in the city came with their robes and brought food to the Capitol steps, and just to watch and to see how that has grown. I think that we all have to be reminded sometimes that not all of us in our society have the benefit of being able to go to the grocery store and purchase. Mm-hmm. And so you reminded me of when we started all this. And then we decided that we had to have gleaning came next.
Yeah.
And where the farmers would allow us to go into the fields to glean. Our major supermarkets said, if you will provide legislation that will hold us harmless so that we're not having lawsuits for commodities that we give, we will give you all of our edible product, which they did. And Bridget Flanagan with Safeway was the first one on my advisory committee. So we have seen it grown, and we still have to be mindful, I think, that there are those in our society who are not able to have the same benefits that we do. And I want to thank you for reminding me of that, Marcia. And I know Ellen was here when we did all of this, so she's been around this building probably longer than I have, or about the same amount of time. Thanks very much.
I participate on a pretty regular basis with our Kiwanis Club in sorting food at the food bank. And it's really nice when we do get fresh food, but the fresh food in the summertime is just really a benefit.
Well, I think most of all of our clubs now have become a part of the collection of foods around the state, the rotaries, and I know that the post office, the postal workers have their program going, mm-hmm. and it just really is nice to see throughout our communities it's occurring. But this also provides us with an avenue of fresh product, which I think is very beneficial to have. We don't think about it, I think, up here that you get an orange or an apple or a head of lettuce. You know, we kind of take those kinds of things for granted, and this is an avenue to allow for fresh produce and fresh vegetables. So,
thank you. And I'll give Rosie a dollar for screwing up the name.
Representative Farr. And if you would like, if you're going to speak on both Senate Bill 500 and Senate Bill 501, you can combine them.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Madam Chair, Pat Farr, House District 14, Eugene. Prior to my serving on the Eugene City Council, I didn't think we had hunger problems in the state. During my service on the council, I happened to be on the Human Rights Commission and on the Housing Policy Board, and through my contact with the folks in those commissions, I realized that what I didn't know was going on around me was actually going on, that people were hungry. I later chaired a council committee on homelessness and youth, and got to meet a whole bunch more people who just didn't have food, and I couldn't believe it. You know, most days I drive to Salem from my home in Eugene, and I vary the route. Sometimes I come up Peoria Road, sometimes I come up Highway 99, sometimes I go via Independence. No matter which route I take, I see Oregon's abundance all around me as I drive between here and Eugene. When somebody told me that people were hungry in Oregon, I said, how can that possibly be when we have so much here? Well, we don't really have a shortage of food in Oregon. That's very obvious. What we have is a shortage of access to food. Senate Bills 500 and 501 help that. They begin to address a part of that problem. And I really want to thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing these bills. And I'll chip in with what Marcia said and what others have said before me, that I hope we can get these things out pretty quickly so that we can start to take advantage of this season's abundance, what's growing all around us. I don't have a ton of confidence that we're going to solve all of Oregon's problems in this legislature, but we can solve the hunger problem for a few families with the passage of these bills. Once again, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee, for hearing this bill.
Thank you, Representative Farr. Benelda Dotson and Dalton Hobbs.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Danelda Dodson, Administrator for the Office of Family Health. I don't want to re-say the things that have been said about Senate Bill 500 and 501, but to say that the Department of Human Services supports this concept, even though we know that it is not in the governor's budget. But I'd like to point out that in these seniors and in the Women's and Infants Farmers Market, these are local foods for local tables, meaning that these programs support the local farmers in their farming activities. And in fact, many of these farmers have reported that without the additional benefit from these programs, it would have an adverse effect on some of their income. The other thing to note within these programs, both of them will be utilizing not only the farmers markets, but the roadside stands and farm stands as well. And within the senior market, we have an additional advantage of being able to support community-supported agriculture, where those individuals that may not be able to get out to those markets can have food delivered to drop-off sites for them to pick up.
Mr. Hobbs.
Thank you, Senator Winters and members of the committee. I'd like to, I'm Dalton Hobbs. I'm the administrator of the Agricultural Development and Marketing Division of the Oregon Department of Agriculture. And I'd like to add our voice to this chorus in support of these two pieces of legislation. We approach this really from two perspectives. Certainly, the Department of Agriculture is very concerned about resolving the issues related to hunger. At the same time, we're also very concerned and interested in ensuring that we have a sustainable agricultural base here in the state. These two pieces of legislation really get to both of those, and what they do is allow the inflow of federal money that goes directly to farmers, and it increases the local farm economy in a time when net farm incomes are at some of the lowest they've ever been, certainly as low as during the Depression. These kinds of opportunities and alternatives have meant real benefit in the rural part. And this is a great example of helping bridge the urban-rural gap, where you have the ability to bring money into the rural area out of the urban area. And I'd like to also echo Donalda's comments about the community-supported agriculture. Last year under this program, we had one community-supported agriculture program enrolled. This year we have three. And this is an important way that seniors that otherwise have no ability to get to the farm stand or get to the farmer's market to have this fresh, wholesome produce delivered directly to them as more of a programmatic way. And I think this is part of the innovative approach that our department, working with Donalda's department, has made to make this program really work. And Oregon is, in fact, a leader nationwide, one of the largest recipients of this money. This bill, these two bills, will allow us to continue to maintain that position. So thank you very much for your support of this bill.
I think Mr. Agriculture is back there, too. Don Schillenberg.
For the good.
No, Madam Chair, you are good.
Huh?
You are good. I think you've picked up $5-6 since I've been in here.
It's for a worthy cause.
That's right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Don. Farm Bureau puts it.
Yeah. Bar the doors.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. We're not here to stick at that hog. Maybe we can help fatten them up. I don't know. As the Representative Smiths are, at least are painfully aware, the Oregon economy and agriculture has kind of been on the downside for a while, notwithstanding the fact that in the last fiscal year or crop year, counting the 2001-2002 crop year for which the Department of Agriculture has statistics, Oregon agriculture had the highest gross income in history. But then, as Mr. Hobbs indicated, it's the lowest net income to farmers in the last 20 years. So, you know, we've got a problem out there, and I don't say that to indicate that we are in need of the services provided under Senate Bills 500 and 501, which we are here supporting today. The impact, of course, of those two bills is the fact that markets are hard to come by, and any market that's available is a help to the agriculture community. Farmers markets are one of those markets that are available to individual farmers. Farmers markets are not a venue through which the majority of farmers are going to be able to market a large share of their product. Just not possible to do it in that manner. But any market is a help. Anytime you have a market that you can access and you can put product into, however small it is, it's product that isn't going into what we might call the standard commercial market. And so it would tend to buoy the prices in that market. So we appreciate very much this program that the state has had, and would ask very seriously that you consider continuing the program and funding at the levels provided in the Senate bills. Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
Are there any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there any additional testimony? If not, I'm going to open a... I would think that the good Senator Shields would probably have a comment, but I'll open the work session on Senate Bill 500 and ask the good Senator Frank Shields if he has any comment, since I duly noted that Senator Frank Shields was one of the major sponsors of this bill.
Now, I would only say that I did have a brief conversation earlier this morning with Senator Starr, the other co-sponsor of both of these bills. He was quite happy to see that they have made it to the Ways and Means Subcommittee and hopes for speedy action. I think both of us, if he'd been sitting here, would have been a little bit nervous half an hour ago when we didn't have a quorum on either side. But now that you've got quorums on both sides, Madam Chair, I hope you'll act swiftly.
Well, Madam Chair will be swift. I have open work session on Senate Bill 500. Are there any... I understand that Senator Gordley moves that we...
Yes, I do, Madam Chair.
That was a moving speech.
Senator Gordley moves that we recommend to full Ways and Means the passage of Senate Bill 500 relating to women, infants, and children. Is there any objection? And open up work session on Senate Bill 501.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 501 do pass recommendation to full Ways and Means.
Representative T. Smith moves Senate Bill 501 full Ways and Means with the do pass recommendation. Is there any objection?
Madam Chair, since both these bills depend on a certain amount of the weather and growing conditions, is there any chance of getting these out of Ways and Means, full Ways and Means, quickly and out of the floor?
It is my hope that we will get them to full Ways and Means as expeditiously as possible. We know that Cindy will be talking to the co-chair so we can get them scheduled on the agenda and get them out of here.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome. And with that, we will now have Mr. Olson. We will open work session on Senate Bill 5514, which is the Disabilities Commission. I'm ready.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. I'm going to be working off the memo that was delivered to your offices yesterday. I have some extra copies if anybody needs them. This is Senate Bill 5514, the budget bill for the Oregon Disabilities Commission. I'll start down. start down through the section that is labeled LFO recommended budget changes.
Is the agency here?
Yes.
Why don't you come for Pacer's questions? I see Janine is here and Pam is here.
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, the co-chair's budget for the Disability Commission eliminates all general fund from the agency. At the time the co-chair's budget was released, the commission was asked to develop a budget proposal using other funds and federal funds only. They have done that and responded to that request, and this LFO recommended budget is essentially what they have come back with as far as their recommendations. Now, with that in mind, in budgets that you have seen in the past, you have noted that we've recommended adjustments for salary freeze, inflation, gas reductions, those types of things. Because this budget is without general fund and has already been reduced significantly, none of those adjustments are made. This, in essence, as I said, is the budget that was proposed by the agency using other funds and federal funds only. So with that, the governor's balanced budget did include policy package 101, which shifted some expenditures from federal funds to other funds. Because of the way the budget is constructed now, that package is not necessary, and so LFO is recommending not approving that package. Package 102, the same is true with this package. The package would have restored one position to full-time status. This position was lost during the special sessions in 0103 to help meet the budget shortfall statewide. The agency in their proposal that they've provided eliminates two positions already, 1.5 FTE. And so this package also is not recommended. Which brings us to policy package 003, which is the package that makes the co-chair's budget adjustments. The agency has proposed using four FTE, five positions, three full-time and two half-time positions. Their services and supplies total budget would be $243,945. The package also restores funding for the TALEN program, Technology Access for Life Needs program, which is a federal program. That funding for that program was scheduled to sunset on March 31st of 2003. And so no new funds or expenditure limitation was built into the governor's balanced budget. Since that time, the federal government has reauthorized the TALEN grant for one more year, and so the policy package 003 increases the federal funds expenditure limitation for those funds, the TALEN funds.
Question, Representative Bates.
Yeah, Rick, if Congress goes ahead and authorizes another year of TALEN funds, would we need to do a change of expenditure, or could the E-Board do that?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, they would come to the E-Board.
They'd take care of it.
Yeah, and you'll see, actually, it's on the following page, page 3. LFO is recommending that the subcommittee approve an increase in the federal funds expenditure limitation for the current biennium, which is slightly over $78,000 for the TALEN funds that they did receive and will be used in the 0103 biennium.
So would that be sufficient to handle, should they have an extension of the TALEN program?
Madam Chair, no. They would have to come back to the emergency board next spring once if TALEN is reauthorized again.
Any additional questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
If staff could refresh my memory, the source of the other funds is what?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, the source of the other funds comes through contracts with other state agencies, for providing interpreter services and those types of services for other state agencies.
And we could, Madam Chair, hear from the agency on the recommendation that eliminates all the general fund and has the agency functioning on other funds. I understand that there's agreement then that's been reached about all of this, but could we get something on the record about the agency's position?
Janelle?
Are you ready for me?
Yes.
Okay. For the record, my name is Janine Delaney, and I am the Executive Director of the Oregon Disabilities Commission, and Chair Winters and Senator Gordley. The only reason we're able to survive the next 2 years is because, in part, I saw this coming, and we have been very frugal with other funds, and we have a significant carryover that we're using as bridge funding. It will impact us drastically in a number of ways. We will not be able to provide the information and referral that we now provide. It's likely that we'll have to reduce commission meetings. I won't have, a full-time assistant, so we'll need to find other ways for reasonable accommodation and other things that I need. What we have presented here is a bare-bones budget that will get us through the next 2 years in survival mode while we, one, hope that the economy does better, and, two, continue to look for strategies to fund the commission. This is the best that we could come up with given very difficult circumstances. We have gone to our contracting agencies and said, do we have your permission to not only use this money for providing our deaf and hard of hearing services, but to also support the general activities of the commission? And they have said yes, but I think that's a qualified yes in the sense that we would not want you, the legislature, to believe that they're willing to do that on an ongoing basis. So that's kind of where we stand at this point.
Janine, who are your contracting agencies?
Employment, Department of Human Services, DAS, Department of Education, Oregon Youth Authority. I can't remember all of them. There are a number of smaller ones.
So these are primarily state agent. They're state agencies.
They're state agencies. We have checked because we were asked during our initial budget hearings as to whether the funds that come through our other funds programs are their general funds, and to the degree that we've been able to determine that, at least for our two major contracting agencies, which are Employment and DHS, they were not general funds for them.
Senator Shields.
Well, I don't know whether to ask these questions of Rick or Janine, but my ears perked up at the information and referral segment. How many calls do you get a month, roughly?
It varies, but between 250 and 400 calls a month that are... many of them, not simply information referral and that we just give a number or a contact, but are complicated technical assistance calls that have to do with the Americans with Disabilities Act and other kinds of disability rights and laws that we interpret not only for state agencies, but for consumers, the general public, for the private sector, employers, et cetera.
Follow-up question, Madam Chair? And again, I don't know whether Rick wants to respond or Janine, but I'm trying to figure this out. If you have 250 to 400 calls a month, and they're from people that I'm assuming have been recently disabled because of an accident, maybe they've become crippled or paraplegic, or maybe they've lost their eyesight or whatever, when the calls come, would those be easy calls you're not going to be answering those calls anyway, so you wouldn't be even able to refer them to anybody else. But if there was some mechanism put in place, would those be easy calls to refer, given the technical, complicated nature of most of those calls?
Well, I have a feeling for many of them, we will be having to use voicemail more than we ever have. We've always been proud that we've not used voicemail as our general answering technique, believing that people with disabilities needed a real voice on the end of that phone. We may not be able to do that anymore, but when we refer calls to other agencies, whether that's the Ombudsman program with DHS, I expect that those complicated calls, that I will then receive a call from the referring agency that says, help, what do I do? So I think we'll get many of them back. It's hard to tell at this point how many of them. And we'll just have to see. I have no way of kind of being able to know what those numbers will look like.
Rick, do you have any response?
Not in addition to what Janine's already provided. I think it will be important to watch it over the next year and a half, so that when the agency comes back during the next session for their budget, we have the answers to those kinds of questions and be able to determine what changes have taken place prior to this 03-05 budget and during the 03-05 budget.
If
the difference has been made.
If they have to come back to the e-board to secure additional limitations based on Talon, it may be appropriate at that time to also bring a report back to the e-board of what is occurring with respect to the referrals and how they're being handled and whether it has become problematic. So you may want to note that, Mr. Olson, in some of our budget note, that we would like for them to have the opportunity to come back and discuss this issue.
Madam Chair.
Senator Scheel.
If you don't mind, a follow-up question. Rick, I notice that one of these positions is a trainer position. It goes from full, I think, to part-time. Isn't the trainer kind of the down-in-the-trenches person that's training people with disabilities how to cope with assistive technology and stuff like that? I mean, what is the implication of this going from full to half-time or whatever?
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, and I think Janine can add to this as well, I think the trainer position is one of those that's being eliminated. The positions that they will be the director, the deaf and hard of hearing program manager, an interpreter coordinator that coordinates the calls for service, interpretive services, an office specialist at halftime, and then an exec support specialist at halftime. Jeannie may want to comment on the trainer position.
And what we will have to do is for training both to state agencies and consumers that is generally related to disability law and helping people understand how to access services, I will have to take on some of that. And then for the training that is provided in the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program, the manager has had that job description rewritten and will be including some training components in that. Just trying to make sure that there's some training out there. It may be less than we're able to do now just because both of those positions have far many other functions that they also must perform too, but just trying to make sure something is there.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shields.
I realize that all I have on this committee is kind of the voice of moral suasion, I suppose you might call it. But I have real apprehension because training is what this commission is all about. And eliminating a position like that, I think, will have a real negative impact on the lives of people that are newly disabled. I've served on advocacy commissions, and I know that they're all under the gun, but this is, I think, very different than just advocacy. This is actually giving people the ability to cope with the tragedy that has affected their lives, and so I'm just expressing some real apprehension about what happens to this agency.
Senator Shields, that's one of the compromises on this with the co-chairs was to have the agency work with the agencies that they work with, like DHS and Employment Division and OIA, to readjust and realign so that we weren't doing, quote, a full suspension. And I need to say that because the co-chairs originally, as you know, was suspending this agency, and because of the work and trying to not to go down that pathway, this was the compromise with the staff working with Janine and others and asking the agencies how much could they absorb and what could they do so that we did not have to take that kind of an action. And so Janine and Pam and Rick have come up with this package as a form. And I would and I know that there's heartburn among us, and not only for this, but for the other advocacy committee.
Yeah.
You know, and so this one, it happens to be a lot more fortunate than the other three. That's not saying that we like it, but I just had to say that because we took it from that space to this space. And
I don't in any way mean that I don't appreciate what Rick's done. I appreciate the work Janine's done. I appreciate what Rick's doing. It's just that when I compare this with the governor's recommended budget, it's very different because the governor's, and it needs to be on the record, I think, that the governor's recommended budget would have kept some of this general fund. And I understand that this is a tough time, but I just wanted to express those concerns. So when you say heartburn, please pass the Tums, is all I can say.
Well, no, maybe need Nexium.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Cornyn.
Well, you know, I also have to express similar concerns, and I appreciate Senator Shields' comments. Looking back at this agency's key performance measures, and there are, let's see, two. The first goal, the first agency goal, is to improve access to and effectiveness and appropriateness of services provided to Oregonians with disabilities. The second goal is to connect Oregonians with disabilities with the services they need. And I realize that there's a compromise that has been struck. But I'm wondering, as that compromise was being discussed, how were these performance measures also taken into account, and what was the discussion, if any, around the ability of the agency to do the things that are laid out in these two goals with effectiveness?
Oh, you're asking me? Well, I mean, I can't look into my crystal ball and say to what degree we'll be able to fulfill those goals. And I tried to, when I looked at a budget that would keep us functional, mm-hmm. Or at minimally functional, I tried to keep the components that would best do that. And, you know, several things have had to happen in order to make that workable in terms of positions and duties being shifted. And I've no doubt that if we are to come back in 2007 or whatever and present on our key goals and our performance measures, I am certain that they're going to be impacted by the reduced funding we have to be able to provide these services. And I can only hope that that would be acknowledged, because we are going to be dealing with not only far less staff but far less funding to do what we normally would do in the way of providing training and access. So,
Madam Chair, as I read through this document, it appears to me that the co-chairs have made a decision to try to probably end this commission's role. and the commission, that I wonder what the policy decision behind that was, eliminating all general funds and then saying if you can maintain it some other way, we'll work with you.
I think the policy,
what was the policy decision
came about, sometime back when they were going through the budget and they suspended the activity of all commissions. And this was one commission as well as all the advocacy commissions, as well as the planning commission. So it was all of those commissions and looking and seeking for dollars. And that was the co-chair's decision. And so one of the things that was asked is they could find within themselves, revenues as well as working with state agencies, because they do work with state agencies. They provide a service for them, and that's where the other fund came from. And that's the work that has been going on between Pam and Janine and Rick in order to try to make sure that they're still operational. And so that's what has occurred.
Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
Are we ready to move Senate Bill 5541 to the full Ways and Means?
I'd rather move 5514.
5514, didn't I say that?
We will recess for 5 minutes, and then I will move this out just a second. Sure.
Chair Winters.
Representative T. Smith.
I'd like to move that we approve the budget of the Disabilities Commission as modified and amend Senate Bill 5514, line 6, delete $298,929, line 7, to $771,400, and line 12, to $487,947,000.
Representative T. Smith. Move that we accept the LFO's recommended appropriation bill as amended, and I won't restate all of her numbers because she stated them all. Is there any objection? Okay, we need the full. Now we need the other recommendation.
Madam Chair, we need a motion to amend. Increase the federal fund limit.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
I'd like to move to amend the Senate Bill 5514 to increase the federal funds expenditure limitation for the biennium beginning July 1, 2001 by $78,495.
Representative Smith moves to amend Senate Bill 5514 to increase the federal funds expenditure limitation for the biennium beginning July 1, 2001 by $78,495. To the full committee with the due pass recommendation. Any objection? Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, I move to approve the performance measures as submitted.
Representative Smith moves to approve the performance measures as submitted. Are there any objections? Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to comment that I hate voting on a situation like this, but in context, the entire budget and what's happened to other commissions, I understand it. I'd like to point out there are some general funds still flowing to this because there's assessment of other agencies that includes general funds also.
Thank so. I think, and I think your comments are well taken, Representative Bates, that this is not about one single agency. This was a decision that was made by the co-chairs that all of the advocacies were going to be suspended. I am just glad that we came up with some solutions. Mm-hmm. They may not be the ones that we like, but it does keep the Disabilities Commission working. And I thank for that. Also that, and I did ask Rick to put in there that for their report to come back to E-Board so that gives us some oversight with knowing where they are. So with that, if there's no further debates and winners.
I'm still yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Carrier.
Yeah, I'll carry it.
With that, we are.
Carry it. Yeah, doesn't matter.
Yeah. With that, we are adjourned.